Parable of the Prodigal Son. Ah, this old chestnut. Whenever this story pops up in the lectionary, I smile just a little. Of all the parables Jesus told, of all the stories we have to work with, the parable of the prodigal son is probably one of my favorites, and without a doubt, one of the easiest to work from when you're writing a sermon. There's a lot going on in this story. You, of course, have the drama of the prodigal son, who demands his inheritance, goes off to a distant land for dissolute living, it says. Dissolute living. Loses it all. We don't know what happens. Maybe he gambled it away. Maybe he drank it away. Maybe he gave it away. Maybe people took advantage of him. Maybe there were wild women and raucous parties, and who knows? We're not told. He just loses all of it in dissolute living. He ends up penniless and homeless. Nobody knows him. Nobody cares about him. So he's stuck working for a pig farmer, and he's so poor he can't afford anything to eat. The slop that he's given the pigs looks good to him. There's something about this. When we read the story of the parable of the prodigal son, there's something here where, in this part of the story, you kind of get that little bit of righteousness going on, right? Right? You're reading the story and you're like, serves you right. You know, you shouldn't have left in the first place. Think about what that did to your dad when you took half your inheritance, stormed off to wild living. Serves you right. If this was a movie, this would be that second act where the main character hits rock bottom, right? And then, of course, we move on to the third act. That's the important one. He figures out I can go home, and even if I'm a servant, a slave in my father's property, they eat better than this. So he goes home thinking, I'm not even worthy to be called son anymore. I have sinned against you and against heaven. Just make me a servant. And as he's walking up the road to home, his father sees him. His father was looking for him. How long has he been gone? But the father has never stopped looking to see if he would come home. The father comes running out to him, runs, puts his arms around him. He's so happy that he's here. The son expected to run into shame and humiliation in this moment, but instead the scene changes to one of joy and jubilation. Forgiveness and grace abound as the father welcomes his long-lost son home. It turns into this feel-good after-school special at this moment, right? That happy ending where you're like, yay, his dad loves him, yay. And then we have the older brother. A lot of times we miss this part of the story. Oftentimes when we read the parable of the prodigal son, right, we get to the party and we stop because that's a happy ending. We like happy endings. We like wrapping it up with a happy ending, right? The son went away, spent all that money. He was broke and homeless. He came home. His dad said, welcome home, and threw a big party. Yay, story's done. But the story's not done. There's another part. The older brother comes from working in the fields, gets up on the porch, and he sees there's a party going on inside. What's going on? One of the servants goes, hey, remember your younger brother that took his half of the inheritance and ran off and had those wild parties? And yeah, he came back broke and homeless and penniless, and your dad just took him in through a party. And the older brother's jealous. He's envious of this. Right? He turns on him. He's the sulker. He laments how he's never even been given a young goat. You know, all I wanted was to have a few friends over, put a goat on the spit, maybe crack open a few beers. Never! You never even gave me a goat! You killed the fatted calf for him. The fatted calf was special. Right? We were talking in my small group about 30 years ago, when 40 years ago, if somebody rang your doorbell, right? If there was a visitor, we treated differently 40 years ago than we do today, right? We didn't have social, we weren't in each other's lives that much back then. So if there was somebody ringing the door to come visit, that was exciting. We're like, somebody's here. And remember your mom always had that Sara Lee Bundt cake she kept back? She wouldn't let you eat, kept it in the pantry? That's for guests, right? She'd whip that thing out. You'd be like, we finally get to eat the Sara Lee. Yeah, it's a good day, right? The fatted calf was the Sara Lee Bundt cake of 2,000 years ago, right? You kept that fatted calf for something special. That's prime veal going on right there. Milk-fed, hand-rubbed veal. Gonna melt in your mouth like butter. And they break it out for the homeless son that just showed up on the doorstep. And the older brother's standing there and he's like, what? Where's mine? All this time that the father tries to reassure his son that, you know, son, all I have is yours. But this is family drama at its finest. I mean, this plays out like a soap opera. It's good stuff. In my corner of the universe, we would say, this'll preach. Right? All kinds of stuff. And every time I come to this story, it seems like there's a new angle to consider, a new perspective to look through. There's a new nugget that I find when we look at this story again. Obviously, when I've read the story in the past, a lot of times we focus primarily on the prodigal son, the younger brother. Right? He's kind of the main character in the first two-thirds of the story. And it's something about his story. We've all felt that feeling of being lost, right? Of being away from home, right? The son went away to, it says, a distant country. That's not so much how far away it was. It's really describing this parable when we're separated from God. We've all been in those moments in our life where we're drifting, where we're lost, where we feel like we've wandered away from God's presence, right? And every time when we turn around and look back, God's waiting there with those open arms, just like in the story. But we've all felt that, so I think we all relate to the prodigal son. We can all look at that and say, yeah, I've had moments in my life when I've been in that distant country. Right? When I turned 18 and graduated from high school, I couldn't wait to get out of my hometown. My hometown's not very big. It's about 4,700 people. I did not want to live in a town that small. And so I went away to college. I went far away to college in a town of 2,300 people. You know, don't ask me to be logical. I was 18. Come on. But I've never gone back to my home. But when I left and went to college, I quit going to church. Right? College for me was that distant country. It wasn't that I wasn't in a place where there wasn't any churches. I went to a Christian Church Disciples of Christ school at Culver Stockton College. Trust me, there were churches aplenty. But during that time, I didn't go to church. I was separate. It wasn't until years later that my wife and I felt this calling to be a part and go back again. So I think we all relate to the prodigal son. If not for us, certainly somebody we know and love. We can look at that story and go, yeah, I've seen that play out. Right? That story of storming off, going to do it on your own, get out in the real world. The real world punches you in the face. Right? You end up with nothing. You come crawling back home and you find out that the people who loved you still love you, and you know, it's a good story. We can relate to that. But this time I noticed something about his older brother. Old sad sack, what about me, where's mine? The older brother always struck me as ungrateful, as ungracious, as resentful. But I never realized before, until I read it through this time, that he was lost too. I am a brother. I'm the oldest brother in my family. I have two younger brothers. They're much younger than I am. I'm 9 years older than Luke. I'm 13 years older than Jacob. There have been times in our lives when we have been the best of friends, great friends. And there have been times in our lives when we have been brothers. Right? There have been times in our life when he took my Transformer toy. No, I didn't. He burned my Legos, whatever it was. You know, as adults, we don't fight as much. Usually the fights now center on them coming to terms with me being the favorite. It's hard for any sibling to grasp that, you know, when you're trying to explain it to them. But the fact of the matter is, we are brothers. Even if we fight like cats and dogs, right? We're inevitably linked by that familial bond. We may have moments we don't get along, but you better not cross my brother because he's still my brother. All right? And I might be mad at him, but I'll punch you for coming at him too. Right? Because he's my brother. Just how it is. Yeah, I might hate him right now too, but you're not blood. We know that. We understand that relationship. We can't escape one another. And that's where we find the brothers in the story. They're still linked together even though they don't want to be. The first brother tries to leave his family behind, ventures out on his own. I'll do it myself. Don't need these people. Strikes out independently with his father's money, only to come rolling home some weeks, months, years, who knows how long it's been. The story doesn't tell us. Comes home dirty and disheveled, looking like something the cat dragged in, thinking, of course, he's going to be ostracized and relegated to a position of service in his own family. And surprise, surprise, Jesus lays out a picture of God's love for us. The love that God has for God's children in this relationship of father and son. Jesus shows the power of forgiveness, which doesn't chastise the son for being stupid, doesn't point out the multiple errors in his ways, doesn't knock him down a few pegs for good measure, but wipes his slate clean in jubilant compassion. The son is overwhelmed by this reception. His father throws a robe on his shoulders. He puts a ring on his finger. He puts sandals on his feet. These are not random acts. It's not just that the son didn't have any clothes or wasn't wearing any rings or was barefoot. It's more than that. They're symbolic acts of forgiveness. That robe stands for honor. The ring stands for authority. And in that time, if you were to give someone your ring, it was like making them your power of attorney. You were giving them the responsibility of your name. That's the power that it held. And to put sandals on his feet, slaves don't wear shoes. Family does, right? The masters of the house always had shoes. The slaves did not. So when the son comes up, the robe and the ring and the sandals, these three things answer the plea the son was getting ready to say. The robe is the answer to his proclamation, I have sinned before heaven and before you. The ring is the answer to, I am not worthy to be called your son. The sandals are the answer to his plea, make me one of your servants. The older brother, though, is different from his younger sibling. He stayed. When the younger brother took his inheritance and left, the older brother stayed. He stayed reluctantly, we discover in these verses. He stayed, but he too has been lost. His animosity and his envy have clouded his thoughts. The whole time, apparently, he's resented his father for not letting him enjoy some of the benefits and blessings of the home. He wanted to have some friends over, throw a little shindig. But apparently he never even asked. So full of resentment towards his father was he never even brought it up, never even threw it out there so it could get shot down. Because when his father discovers the son wanted that, his response is, you have always been with me. All that is mine is yours. The older brother pouted his way through life. He trudged through, hopeful that one day his father would pass and all of this would be his. Then he could live as he wanted. He's much more like his younger brother than he wants to admit. They both want their father gone. They both want their father's money. The older brother is just more patient. Now that his brother is home, his father's shocking generosity and graciousness and hospitality slap him hard in the face. Where's my reward? I've been working like a slave for you. Where's mine? What do I get? I've been here the whole time. He might have been the one that stayed, but he is just as lost. We can all relate to the prodigal son. We've all had that existential lost feeling in our lives. We've all been away to that distant country. The distant country is not measured by physical distance, right? It's just where we're separated from God. Anywhere we've been away from God, where we try to live in the world without God, where we're forgetful about God's presence. Whenever you're not in fellowship with God, your life is that distant country. You don't belong there. You're far from home. And many of us have felt the immense relief of forgiveness when we have finally stumbled home again, bedraggled, looking like 8 miles of bad road. But by golly, he just opened his loving arms and welcomed us in, didn't he? We've encountered that kind of grace and love, and it saved us. So we get the younger brother. We relate to him. The older brother is more difficult, though he is just as lost. They have both sought to please themselves. That's the essence of being in that distant country. Listen to the way the scriptures describe the two sons. The younger son goes to his father and says, "Father, give me." He's selfish. He's greedy. He gathered all he had, traveled to a distant country, squandered his riches in dissolute or foolish living. Spent everything, a severe famine came along, he had nothing. Went to work to feed pigs, longed to eat his fill of the slop the pigs were eating. No one would give him anything. And then we get the older brother. Scripture describes him as being angry. He didn't want to go inside. "I don't want to go to the party." Who doesn't want to go to a party? How much of a pouty baby do you have to be to not want to go into the party? His father pleaded with him as he replied to his father, "I've been working like a slave for you. This son of yours comes home." Notice how he described his younger brother. Not my brother, right? Not that idiot, right? "This son of yours." His father replies, "We had to celebrate because this brother of yours." Hidden in there, they're arguing back and forth about whether or not they're going to accept the younger brother or not. The older brother won't even admit he's related to him. The father reminds him, "You can't get away from him." We've all been prodigal of our Father's gifts. We've all received him, yet how often do we live as though Christ has never died and rose again? How often have we lived with self at the center of our life, away from the compassionate, loving heart and home of the Father? We might think we were the younger son. We like to see ourselves in that role because it's a happy ending. "Oh yeah, no, I went away and then I came back and everything was great." We like that role, but how often do we see ourselves as the older brother? Here, not out of joy and thanksgiving, but out of forced duty and rigid obligation. Not here because we realize how blessed we are to be in our Father's house, but here because somebody's got to do it. Somebody has to be responsible for it. Somebody has to step up. "I guess it's going to have to be me." How often have we been the older brother, selfish with the blessings God has given us? "I don't want to share them. I don't know that stranger, that person. Why would I let them use our stuff? It's our stuff. It's mine." It's what the older brother would say. "That fatted calf, that wasn't part of his inheritance. That was part of my inheritance. He took his half and he left. That calf was eventually going to be mine." Right? How often have we been that older brother hoarding our stuff to us? "Don't want to share. Don't want to have a party. It's all mine." realize that we are in our Father's house? Do we not realize how blessed we are, how fortunate? You are always with me. All that is mine is yours. John Ortberg, who's a Christian author, we've read some of his stuff together before, he says one of the hardest things in the world is to stop being the prodigal son without turning into the older brother. Whether you have been away in a distant country or you have felt stuck here because of routine and duty, recognize where you are. You are in your Father's house, not as a slave, not as a servant, but as a child of God, loved, forgiven, saved, and redeemed. All that is mine is yours, the Father says. Both of the brothers in our story were lost. One resented his father and left. One resented his father and stayed. But by the end of the story, only one of them is found. I often wonder about that older brother. The story doesn't conclude. It doesn't tell us what happened. Did he get over himself and go into the party and have some veal? Did he forgive his brother? Did he welcome him back as his brother? Did he come to terms with his own resentment and greed with his father? Did his father's grace and love crack his heart? Did he find the joy of being home, of being where he belonged? Come home today. Come home from that distant country that's separating you from God's love and joy. Come in from the harvest fields and rejoice in your good fortune and blessings. You are always with me. All that is mine is yours. Come home and be lost.